Everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of Bloody Good Horror. My name's Eric, and I'll be your host for this evening, where we will be reviewing Monolith. It's a film about podcasters. No, a podcaster, let's say. It's also kind of about like creepypastas and weird little stories, and that's what we're talking about tonight. It says 2022, John. Is this a wide in 23 or what's the deal with this one?
No, I think it got a release in 24. So this came up because Rachel, I had asked Rachel, I'm like, Rachel, what are the new movies? There's like so few things and you would flag this.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen it, but I had seen the buzz was good for it. So
Well, we'll get to the buzz.
Well, joining me tonight from the Bay Area of San Francisco, please welcome Rachel to the show.
Hello, I'm so happy to be back again.
Next up from the corn area of Indiana, please welcome Casey to the show.
Hello.
And last up tonight from the area that has brings nothing of value to the world except greed. From Manhattan, New York City, the devil's den, so to speak. Please welcome John Schnarch to the show.
just making up nicknames now. Yeah, man.
Hey, sometimes it just comes to happening? Me, John. It's part of my process.
It flows through you. I know.
Right. I get it. Maybe it's a Mandela effect. I seem to recall that was the slogan of Manhattan. No? Is that not right?
The devil's den.
It's a Berenstain Bears thing, all right?
You know that I was watching this movie going, there's no way this journalist lives in this, like a journalist that does journalism as their job.
Well,
lives
it's their parents' house.
No, I understand. But then later on in the movie, and in my head, I was like, well, unless she's like a Nepo baby or something. Yeah. And then later on in the movie, I'm like, oh, there it is. Parents got money. Yeah. All right. Let's do it. Let's take a quick break and review Monolith.
This is it, Jennifer. Your big break in TV. From the prime time.
Main feature.
The sad state of journalism really is that, John, that you're not really going to survive unless you are comfortable living on literally nothing or you have rich parents.
Or a rich significant other is also one of the avenues.
Yeah. So. And I would say, yeah. Yeah.
You can win the lottery. Have you considered that? The lottery angle?
I worked in local TV for years, as you know, John.
Yeah, Eric, that was a joke. We don't need to get into
sometimes I would see two news producers who were like married to each other or in a relationship, and I would just be like, how do you guys think this is going to work? Like, who's paying for lunch? Seriously. But anyway, I digress. John.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Please bring us the word of the day.
Eric, I'm very excited because for the second week in a row, the word of the day is also the title of the movie. The word is Monolith. Look, I texted Eric right before I joined the call to see if there was any fancy audio engineering words that he wanted me to consider, and there was no response. So
left on red.
The word is Monolith. A large, single, upright block of stone, especially one shaped into or serving as a pillar or monument. But it has a second meaning, I think more important for this film. A large and impersonal political, corporate, or social structure regarded as intractably indivisible and uniform. I guess it actually could be either of these for the purposes of the movie, but those are the two. Monolith. Comes to us from the Greek, mono meaning single, and lithos meaning stone. Sorry, I can't see because of the light in my face.
Yeah, I see your text now. There is lots. There's nothing from this film that stood out to me. It's extremely basic editing she's doing.
Yeah,
it's
like no, obviously.
I feel like they pulled someone's how-to YouTube video and just like.
I mean, we can get it. It's not inaccurate. It's just not the point of the movie.
The editing. The editing part is probably the most accurate part. There's some extremely inaccurate parts about how podcasts might get produced. Well, but it's
pretty. And when she just like, shoots it over to the guy and is like, okay, you can post it now. And like,
I'm
going to
try
no
not to be pedantic about it because it's not the point of the film. But
yeah, so what you're saying is this documentary failed.
Yeah, we can talk about it. John, tell me about this movie.
Not a ton to share necessarily. Comes to us from director Matt Vesely. It does look like it is his first feature film. He's had a bunch of other credits, writing, some producing, and, you know, sort of other departments. He has a bunch of shorts, but this is the first feature. It is Australian. It is sort of shot. Stars an Australian actress. It's all whatever set there. Not that it, I mean, matters necessarily one way or the other, but they have accents, so there's that. This is an interesting one. I didn't know anything about this. You know, as I was saying at the top, you know, Rachel and I had kind of been texting about a couple of things that came out or were released this year. This is one of the ones that we were looking at. It is about a podcaster. Her name is,
interviewer.
The interviewer. Yeah. I'm looking at the IMDb page and I'm like, well, she doesn't maybe have a name. She is a journalist. As we've discussed, she's living at her parents' house. She had basically been like fired from a previous job or like sort of let go because of a sort of like minor journalism scandal, which is like not, it's not explained 100%, or maybe I can't even remember. Do they explain exactly what happened at some point?
She didn't do her due diligence on her fact checking, and somebody got falsely accused of a crime and maybe committed suicide.
Oh, okay. All right. That's more extreme than I remembered it being.
That seems bad.
It's not great.
It happens.
They don't care about that in the Devil's Den. Well, that's just everything. Hold on. Stuff.
It's also
not in the Devil's Den, no.
Like a journalist, typically a journalist, there is a separate person who is the fact checker. So like if a story is not fact checked, that's like, yes,
it depends
it's on the
what, it depends
like,
on what level we're talking about here.
There's layers of editorial control.
It seemed like she was writing A and B at a legitimate newspaper. In which case, that's like maybe the only scenario I could see a legit fact checker existing is like an old school newspaper.
I mean, Eric, some of the podcasts that I worked on or was involved with, fact checkers that worked on the podcast. Like, I mean, it's not so crazy. But in any event,
it doesn't happen in television. I can tell you that.
She's let go.
Not to pull the curtain back.
She is now working, developing a podcast. Freelance. I'm going to forget the name of the show. It's like, it's sort of like
Beyond Belief.
Beyond Belief. Yeah, that's it. It's like one of these like what if / like what's the Leonard Nimoy show? We've discussed
In Search of.
Yeah. It's like that type of setup where she's covering the mysterious, the unexplained, yada yada. There's like a hint of true criminess to it. She gets a tip in her email that points her to a person, and it like the very vaguest allusion of a story. And she then reaches out to that person. And what we see for the rest of the film is her like following this thread and sort of where that spiders out. The very rough outline is that there are a lot of people around the world who have received these black bricks. Typically, it's like tied to something bad that has happened in their life, or like it comes into their life at a time when there's like heightened emotional something or other going on. Maybe there's like extraterrestrial things, you know, involved. They all have dreams or sort of visions that are tied into the brick or the arrival of the brick. But that's it. I mean, and so she starts running this down. The film is really just about this one character in a house pursuing this story as a podcaster. Although they do some really interesting stuff cinematography wise that maybe we get into. I don't know. That's it. Let's just go from there.
Casey.
All right. I'm going to get geeky here and throw out some information, but I kind of love this movie. I had no idea what we're getting into. Stars texted us and he said, Rachel said that, you know, throughout this monolith. And I'm like, I looked at the plot. And I'm
fully
like,
blaming Rachel if anyone didn't like it. That was like my plan from the beginning.
Wow. Yeah. Scapegoated again.
Yeah. Hey, you'll feel better though, because I figured if Rachel recommended it, the plot looks okay, I'm down. I'll watch it. Got hopes. So leading into this, I happened to read a short story on a whim over the weekend. Had nothing to do with this movie and whatnot. I just had a whim. It was an old story. And I'll get into the details in a moment. Started watching this movie, and about 20 minutes in, I started to see parallels happening. And I was texting Schnars about it a bit last night. But by after watching this, this movie is straight up a retelling of The Call of Cthulhu by H.P. Lovecraft. And it's more than just based on structure or anything like that. This is the story of Call of Cthulhu. You replace Cthulhu with the kind of dark entity that's described in a lot of her interviews. And you take out the cult aspect of Call of Cthulhu. And everything else is pretty much there. Call of Cthulhu starts out with a gentleman who had inherited his uncle, who had just passed away mysteriously, his belonging. He was a professor. He found this cache of information about these weird stories based around a stone idol, and he started investigating them. And the story is him going through all these various articles and talking to people and gathering tidbits of this crazy story that his uncle was following that eventually led to his demise. So there's that whole aspect. They've replaced it with the podcaster here, and she's doing the exact same thing with chasing down these threads of these stories and talking to different people. The stories and the clues she's finding also parallel. There's people that she's talked to in this movie that talked about having weird dreams and stuff of monumentous stuff and whatnot. That's all part of Call of Cthulhu. And more than anything, the black bricks. And all the whole scene about the black bricks and figuring out that they're talking about the hieroglyphs and the languages and the inscriptions that are on them and all the symbols, straight out of Call of Cthulhu. That is the Cthulhu idol. And they have the same discussions going through that.
Casey, I've literally never heard you this excited before.
And they even, you know, Schnars mentioned they didn't know if it was extraterrestrial origin and whatnot. And they make a mention that it's like maybe it's a metal not of this earth. The Cthulhu idol is described as coming from the core of a dark, distant, and dead star.
Holy shit.
It is Call of Cthulhu, straight up. And with that, they've made it their own. They've changed some POVs around. They've added some details, and they concentrated more on the narrator. And with that in mind, I really kind of loved it. I was blown away. I thought this was a great modernization and a great retelling. And, you know, yes, they shuffled some stuff around and it didn't make it terrible. And I just really dug what they had going here.
Well, I'm convinced.
So there you go.
Take a breath, Casey. I'm worried about you.
I'm excited.
I love it. I love
I've
it.
I've been thinking about this since last night.
Rachel, what'd you think?
Damn, it's hard to follow that. I mean, I did not discover the conspiracy at the heart of this film like Casey did. But I mean, and I was like looking at it like through a much, much more modern lens. So it's really interesting to as you're saying, as that unwound, I was like, oh my God, you're right. This totally is kind of a modern retelling of that. I was also very drawn into this movie. I am a sucker for a mystery. I am a sucker for anything cosmic or otherworldly, and this hit all of those marks. I love a good yarn. It will always get my attention. And in those sort of situations, I feel less like I need to have, if the storytelling is strong enough, I don't need a ton of like visual impact. Not to say that there aren't some really cool visual moments in this. And then on a more meta level, I liked the conceit of the storytelling, that it's like very stripped down, very singularly focused on the audio storytelling. And I was really curious to see if they could pull it off, because I think it's kind of a bold choice to do with a film. And I think that they mostly succeeded in that. I have some kind of quibbles with the end, and I think we'll probably talk about that in spoilers. But I do think that what really worked for me, because I was not catching that this was Call of Cthulhu, was, you know, the meta commentary around journalism, around unreliable narrators, around the way that structure impacts who gets to craft narratives. who we actually should put our trust in. Those ideas did actually resonate for me, and I thought they were really interesting, and it was kind of an interesting way to kind of get at some of those core ideas, especially now that we live in this time of like very democratized news and storytelling. So yeah, I also liked this, but we'll talk about the end a little bit, I think, but I did largely like this.
Should I go? Do you want me to go? Usually you direct the attention, but you're on mute, I think.
Ah.
There we go.
God, in any event. This stupid mic has a button on it that you can accidentally hit. I said John.
Oh, no. I did not. No. And then I saw you moving and I'm like, huh.
All we got was dead stare.
Yeah. I would say in the final analysis, I am okay with this movie. I thought there were some things that were very effectively done. I thought it looked really good. I think they hang the entire movie on this actress. Her name is Lily Sullivan. Mm-hmm. And I thought she did a pretty good job. She apparently was in Evil Dead Rise. I guess she was like one of the main people in that.
She's the sister that's there. Yeah.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Beth.
The aunt. Not Evil Dead.
Yeah, I thought she was good. And, you know, for a movie that is literally, like, you spend an hour and a half with her, often in close-up on her mouth, you know? I mean, like, so for something that's done on sort of, you know, I would say a very small budget, I mean, I would be shocked if this was not a very small budget. I think it works. The most interesting thing to me, again, as someone who's like worked in podcasting, like has spent a lot of time around podcasting, like there's a version of this movie that is just a podcast. Like you could do just an audio version of this movie. And in fact, there's like large segments of this movie where you could close your eyes and you almost might be having like, I don't want to say a better experience.
I'm not saying that I did this, John, but you could potentially do other things while watching this movie.
you absolutely could. I did like, I mentioned it rather than, like they do, there's a couple of scenes where it cuts. And again, this was some of the stuff that it was like done well enough that I almost think it could have been like done more effective, like deliberately. I mean, not that it was all deliberate, but like, when she cuts over to some of the audio of like the interviewers and the interviewers are telling their story. And then they like go to these cut scenes that are sort of dreamlike. They're describing their dreams or they're describing something that happened. And it's like slow camera movement it's meant to give it sort of like an ethereal quality to the visual. I sort of liked it. I could have like used a little bit more structure around maybe some of that. I don't know. I think it also, I like wanted it to go somewhere that was a little bigger and grander ultimately than it did. And I don't know, Rachel, if that's what you're necessarily referencing or something more specific, but it's a small movie and like it works, but like I didn't love it. Let's just say.
Yeah, you might, one Rachel might say, this is a good sit. Or a good walk around and do chores while you're keeping
good one listen.
Good listen.
Good pace.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things like going into it, you just have to, and even if you don't know this, I feel like the film sets your expectations pretty quickly of what it is. But yeah, like it's very audio focused and it's, there's an aspect of it that is a little reminds me of found footage. It isn't found footage, but it's like, it's kind of exercising that same part of your brain where you're filling in the details and the imagery sometimes and the scares, where like they're creating setting up a story and creating a mood and an atmosphere. And then you sort of have to bring a little bit to it yourself. With your imagination, you know, because a lot of the film, I would not say it's scary really at any point, but it is creepy. You know, it's like, it's creepy in a fun, like moody way, right? And you're listening to the stories. And I thought she's great. pretty much every actor they had doing the conversations with her, they're essentially voice actors. They're really great. Some stand out more than others, but there's no one like that you're like, oh brother, you know, like it's, they're all pretty solid, like voice acting performances. Yeah, it is funny. It is real navel gazy about podcasting. You know, like just little shit. And listen, I don't just do BGH. Like I do this professionally now, as John has also worked in podcasting for a while. Like you would never like make one episode of a show and then put it out like this. Like you'd produce a bunch of it so that you could like sell it. Like, but beyond that, yeah. Even you would do all the production first and then sit back and be like, what do we have here?
Yeah.
You don't just interview two people, go boop, 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 episode one, and then be like, what's next? I don't know. Like
well, she was trying. I mean, I don't think the show was meant to be a like 8-part series about the monoliths or the bricks. Right. It is meant to be like each week we're just taking your kooky questions and feedback. And so yeah, she's putting this one out. And she does say, like, please send in your like feedback. And then immediately she's getting like a gazillion people. I was sort of like, how many people are listening to this podcast? But yeah, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's also like, that made me laugh too. And she was like, I just have to make something so good people will listen. And it's like, oh honey, like it is yeah. So fucking hard to get people to listen to a podcast, even if it's the best thing ever. Yeah. Like, so that may be a lot, whatever. It's just silly, like pedantic shit, honestly. The actual tech stuff, all like pretty accurate from my perspective. It is funny for me watching someone just working in Adobe Audition, because that's just how I spend a lot of my day. And I was just like, I just did this for 8 fucking hours. Like,
I'm going to make this dramatic audio cut. Where
yeah. It is like, although I do think
it wasn't real Adobe.
It looked pretty, pretty accurate to Audition. Yeah. Like,
nice.
I do think part of what they're showing is probably interesting for people who don't do it. Like, you do legitimately chop people's words together in a way that to like a layperson might seem a little hinky, but like, you have to make those decisions in a way that you know to be not changing the content ethical. Of what they're saying, like in an ethical mm-hmm. way. Mm-hmm. And like, listen, you listen to shit all the time. Do you trust that person that they're making that decision? You don't know, because the host may not even be editing it. It might be another editor or producer you don't even see. So you're listening to shit all the time that is manipulated in the same exact way that she did this. And that doesn't now, this is how conspiracy theorists go, everything's a narrative. Like there's the Bilderberg group. Like, listen, a lot of times it's just a fucking overworked editor who wants your dumbass sentence because you couldn't speak right. Who wants your sentence to make sense. And so we're chopping up and making you sound like an intelligently coherent person. That's what it is most of the time. I'm not saying no one out there has an agenda.
He's not saying the Bilderberg group isn't involved at some level.
John's like, yeah, like John trying to pretend like he's not a part of the Bilderberg group. But then, no, that's what gets on my nerve when they're like, people especially railing against local TV. And I'm like, bro, you have no idea how everyone at a local TV station is barely hanging on to their fucking mental health and sanity. Like, the idea that they give a shit about some large conspiracy theory is hilarious. Like, they're trying to fill their newscast with whatever bullshit comes down the pipe so they can go home and eat pizza or something. You know what I mean? So, anyway. all that is to say, while there are some like things that they clearly fudge, like it is actually fairly accurate. I really have no clue how interesting that is to your average person, but it is like, again, like it's largely an audio drama. So they really did need, you can tell they had to sit at a drawing board and be like, where are places that we can like zhuzh this up a little bit?
Yeah, well, that's the like dream sequence things where,
well, and then like during some of the monologues with the callers, like we bust into semi-dream sequence, semi-like fictionalized recreation sort of. Mm-hmm. Those mm-hmm. moments I wish went harder.
Yeah.
Because they're the moments where everything comes together and puts you in that place where like a really sweet jump scare would be awesome. Like when, like, and again, it's probably just really low budget, but there's the one where the guy's talking about seeing a face, a weird person in his bathroom. And this line is so good. And it was like, his face looked like wet bread mm-hmm. and moist mm-hmm. bread. I was like, oh, yeah. Like, now, And you know what it kind of reminded me of in a way? Remember that documentary? I think it was called Nightmare. It was from the Nightmare documentary people. Yeah. And that was just like real life interviews of people talking about their nightmares. And then they went and shot recreations. It's not amazing, but it sort of reminded me of this. And I think they probably, they either didn't have the money. And so, right, that kind of limits your palette of what you can do. But, or they really made the decision of like, we want to keep this in that imagination realm and really just try to conjure something for people. But unfortunately, I think because of the language of film, when you're creeping down this hallway and you're getting ready to go into this bathroom, like you're waiting for some shit to happen. And it's they put some food coloring in the water. And
yeah, like, the bathtub was like black. Like it was
a little more.
It was sort of like half and half. Yeah, yeah.
So I would have gone for some cheap ass jump scares, honestly, because I think it would have kept you a little more on edge and maybe made the whole thing like just a little more elevated, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to be clear from my earlier comments comparing to the story, that whole part of this movie, that's all invented by these folks for this movie. So
the what?
You know, the her hearing the creepy noises in the bathroom and creeping down the hall, the whole double thing and whatnot, that's all invented for this movie.
Yeah, that's like recreations of the interviews that she's doing.
So also like I love Casey's Call of Cthulhu thing. I'm not going to pretend to be well-read enough to know anything. Like, I think I read 10 pages of a Lovecraft story once and was like, nope, not going to read that. But so I love that. But I think it's also clearly inspired by just a lot of podcasts. Like, there is the Black Tapes in here. There is Limetown and like this is very well-trod territory in the podcast world. And you can just feel how much inspiration they took from those things.
I did not look this up. I don't know if anyone else reads it. Like, was this an actual podcast that they developed into a movie? I mean, because
I don't think so.
Okay, because that is like every podcast that gets made, they're like, maybe there's a derivative opportunity. And obviously very few of them ever come together.
I will give you credit here, Casey. Levi on YouTube says, Casey cooking with gas.
I got excited, but I had to get it out before everybody started talking.
But so it's interesting because normally, right, it's a narrative podcast first and then somebody goes, oh, we could turn this into like a limited run series or something. So it's kind of interesting to see this thing clearly inspired by that stuff.
Well, I meant like, did this get developed and even potentially released as a fiction podcast, and then they were just like, oh, this is like, we can actually just make a movie out of this. It is
with some small tweaks, with the exception of the ending, you could release this audio only and have it be almost as effective.
I mean, the ending, like you could do it in audio. Like it's just like, it's not that crazy. If anything, the audio, what your imagination would do with the audio might even be more impactful than what's happening. You know?
I think that the problem is that it's not, the movie's not found footage. So some of those, I'm trying to think, like, does she talk to herself at all?
Well, she's recording a bunch of those scenes.
Yeah, I guess she's recording a lot of it. So I feel like maybe there's a few places where it would have to be recontextualized
a little more.
I love that scene when her dad called her back and she was talking to him and asking questions about her birthday. And he was going along and whatnot and talking to her until like 5 minutes into the convo. And she mentions the podcast. And he's like, God damn it, are you recording me?
So that's a really big moment too, like a big story thing, right? So eventually, because they are, this is the point at which they're like, okay, we're going to make this like a movie. And so they write into the story that she's investigating. She's actually involved in it. That section I thought was pretty compelling, like her discovering that and learning about it. It's the doppelganger thing at the end that I was like, fucking what? Like,
well, it gets,
and literally I almost got on this call. I forgot, but I was going to get on this call before we were live and be like, can you guys tell me if I was supposed to understand that? So I don't sound like a big dummy on the podcast. Cause I was like, you saw Annihilation and thought that was cool. Is that what's happening?
That's 100%.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked a little bit about having trauma fatigue on this show, how like this is a well-trod, you need to come
correct. I got enough of my own, Rachel. I don't need everyone else.
I'm suffering a little bit of ambiguous ending fatigue. I think it can still work. Like, I'm not going to blanket
turn on an ambiguous ending. It's extremely ambiguous to the point where I think it feels unsatisfying.
Well, especially if the conceit of the film is an unraveling of a mystery. Right. So it is like set you up narratively to give you some sort of reveal. And so you end up with like narrative blue balls at the end when it's just like, we've gone all the way into metaphor town at this point. And I think largely the metaphor holds. I will say that. The metaphor holds, like, however you want to see the meaning of the brick and whatever
it is.
Could
you explain it to me like I'm five?
Well, I mean, I think that there's some version of this, like everybody got the brick around some sort of traumatic experience that they did not actually grow from. And we find out that she gets the brick when she has, after she deletes the message from her father, and there is this legacy of her being an unreliable storyteller.
That's interesting, right? Because it's like a weighty thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. So like on that level, the doppelganger that comes out of it is the version of herself that has not learned from it. Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. The metaphor holds, but the
you should be a movie
narratively.
Scientist.
My PhD in
embedding. We're doing right now, I guess, now that I think about it.
So yeah. That's funny because as excited as I was with the Cthulhu stuff, I did not pick up on that metaphor. Mm-hmm.
No, but I was watching the ending like, fucking what? I was like, oh, thank God Rachel's on the show tonight.
Honestly, I was hoping we'd get the bread-faced man in which turned that corner in the bathroom, but I would have been okay with it.
Just one creepy man is all this movie needed. Mm-hmm. Creepy man, creepy lady, whatever. Like, just, yeah, I needed a little bit of an antagonist vibe, I feel like.
Well, they're also, I did watch the trailer to this movie. When Rachel and I were discussing it and I was trying to decide, like, is this a thing we're going to cover? The trailer does also imply that they're like, it's called Monolith. Like, it's like, there is this like overarching thing. This is happening across multiple people. Like what, because the end of this movie is about her and her experience and the, you know, like it makes the movie smaller when mm-hmm. like the story she's been unraveling is a large one. Like, is the Bilderberg group involved? We don't know, but who cares now? Because it's just about her and her like unsolved trauma from her child or whatever, you know, like it's, it actually makes the movie less interesting. Like that to me was the unsatisfying part is like, I wanted the like cosmic, whoa, you know, and instead you get the like, well, all right.
Yeah, I guess, it briefly toys with going into a place of social contagion, which I thought was actually an interesting place to go, like kind of like a la Pontypool, but also, again, the metaphor holds. When the other sort of seasoned, like, I guess, like old school style reporter tells her we have a responsibility to the public, like it starts to ask really interesting questions about what that actually means. And if we're passing on these like corrupted, you know, misleading ideas, the way that it like perpetuates these, you know, this corruption was really interesting. And so I was a little disappointed when, like you said, instead of going bigger and like talking about, you know, it's set up with all of these ideas of how many people are listening, it decided to go in. It was, just, I think, part of what made it a little anticlimactic.
Yeah, they do hang this whole movie on her, right? And then so like they then have to like end with her, I guess, which. Sure. But it's a smaller movie. It like makes the experience less. It unwinds or it diffuses a lot of the drama that they've built through that.
Like
point.
Even if they did a pullback, like a like some sort of epilogue where we saw maybe like larger impacts of what she did. Or, you know what I mean? I don't know.
How about like, the like 2001 Space Odyssey monolith just like on her front doorstep, like outside the house? And then you're like, oh,
it was
boy.
Interesting when you see that the sky. Thing? Did you guys mention that?
No.
You see it in the sky at one point over her house, like a giant brick floating in the sky.
What was that?
It's basically like if you were not... This is interesting, John, as somebody that was kind of doing other shit. If you were not fully paying attention and you're just going by sound cues, you would not know anything was happening. You would think it was a transition scene. I just happened to be looking when it happened. And like, it's like a giant, like Hellraiser 2 style, floating in the clouds brick, basically.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
It was mostly for mood, I feel like.
I wanted to unpack all the language stuff inside it. Like, that's the stuff that I was like, really excited
about.
Yeah,
like the thing she carved into the table. Like, there's a.
Yes. I want to go there.
And again, like, this is. It's a small movie. It's a, you know, small budget. Like, but they do a lot and they introduce a lot and then they shrink it.
Narrative blue balls.
Mm hmm.
Yeah.
You said it.
Maybe that's my problem. I don't know.
I did think there was a couple. I wouldn't say there's a lot that caught my eye, especially for a movie that's shot in one, you know, location, essentially one room. I thought they did a couple cool things with like scenes and the scenery in the background. There was that. There was one scene where she called one of the people that she'd gotten a lead on, or somebody called her back to give her more information, and she walked out into her living room. It was in the morning. She had all the shades drawn. To me, there was that scene as this lady started talking to her, and she tried to, you could tell that she was kind of keying into the conversation, getting into the zone, and she started raising the shades, and you started to see all of her notes get revealed that she'd been taping to the windows and stuff. Mm. I just thought that was a really nice representation. There was a couple moments like that where they kind of reflected her emotions or maybe what's going through her and the scenery.
Look, the house that she's in is a sick house, and they actually do a lot. I just think with like the architecture and the like space of this house, I totally agree. I thought it was shot really well for a movie, you know, that's doing what it's doing here. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was a cool touch for a movie that's shot in basically one room with one person on screen the entire time. Yeah. It's an interesting way to play with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Would you recommend it, Casey?
Absolutely.
Rachel.
It's soft recommend, yeah.
John.
I'm going to say no.
Wow. I think I second Rachel's soft recommend, which is a phrase that I like.
If we can do qualified recommends, I'm trying to be disciplined. Like, it's a yes or a no, and I'm going to be a no here.
Embrace the nuance, John. Embrace the nuance.
John, are we counting this for this year?
Yeah. Right. This will be on the 2024 list.
All right. Well, I think I'm going to put it on my top 10 list. So let's take a quick break and take a look.
Excuse me. Sorry. Tell me, do you like Stephen King?
King? Ooh, frightening stuff.
How would you like to buy The Stand for $7.95?
The hardcover?
Yep. And you don't have to buy anything more.
You got a deal.
Introducing the Stephen King Library, now shockingly easy and inexpensive to acquire, starting with a stand for just $7.95. What comes to mind when I say Stephen King?
Psychos with hatchets. Demon dogs.
Your collection will build into a gruesome library. Pet Cemetery, Misery, The Shining, Carrie. There's no commitment or minimum to buy. Cancel anytime. What do you think of when I say Stephen King? The Stand is complete and uncut for only $7.95. Call now before it's too late.
Nasty creatures you wouldn't believe.
Call 1-800-354-2900 now to get The Stand. Keep it and pay just $7.95 plus shipping and handling. Future volumes will come, one every 7 weeks, each with a 10-day free trial. Keep only the ones you want. Cancel any time.
Hey, I'm Josh McDonald, writer of The Corridor and writer-director of the short film Game. And you are listening to Bloody Good Horror.
info@bloodygoodhorror.com or on Twitter using #AskPGH. Join Patreon to get back episodes and much more. Patreon.com/bloodygoodhorror.
So pretty much at this point of the year, and I expect this to probably be for a lot of this year, it's kind of just like Lisa Frankenstein and then everything else. That said,
you haven't even seen Imaginary yet, Eric. So
I know that came out this week and I was like just in a state and I was like, guys, I can't make it to the theater this week. Can we do something else? So right now I've got Lisa Frankenstein at number one, ISS at number two. I think that's going to hang around this year too. That was a really memorable film that I enjoyed. I love feminism, Rachel.
I know. You got top two.
Number three, Monolith. Mm. Number four, Night Swim. That's all I got so far.
Okay.
We need to see at least seven more movies.
We'll get them in. We'll get seven in.
Oh, my Lord.
I'm excited for you guys to watch Y2K. That's the one I'm waiting for you guys to see.
Is that out? I haven't seen...
I saw it in Austin.
What's the log line on that?
So it's by Kyle Mooney from SNL. Oh, and it is the night of Y2K. At midnight, Y2K happens. It's like teenagers at a party and Y2K happens.
The night of Y2K, I was at a New Year's Eve party, obviously. And I took a bunch of really bad old acid that didn't do much except I couldn't sleep, which was a real bummer because I wasn't even getting the good part.
So you just got speed.
I just got the bad part. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we all like were still alive in the morning, and I was like, "Son of a bitch!"
I was on call. Woo!
I was a real nihilistic 18-year-old, John. I was kind of just hoping we could just. I'll get yeeted into the sun or something.
That's what was going to happen. Like the ATM machine, the ATMs were going to stop working and we'd all be yeeted into the sun.
It didn't pan out for me, John. Turned out I still live life. Christ. Not great.
Rachel, does that it one? Have distro? Is it going to get like theatrical?
It's A24.
Oh, hello. Mm. Okay. Mm. All right.
It's in the bodies sort of lane.
Yeah.
Rachel, did you see the documentary? So you just brought up, you were at South by Southwest. Mm-hmm. Very fancy, by the way. Did you see the documentary about the founders of MoviePass and how they got like that whole thing blew up?
Oh, I need to watch that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I didn't, but I've heard people talking about it. Yeah.
I didn't realize that there were like two like black entrepreneurs that started MoviePass and then it was like purchased by some people. And then just destroy, like that's when it started going all downhill or something. I don't know. That was the narrative kind of coming out of the documentary. So it looks interesting.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So did you see anything else?
I don't know if that was going to work as an idea from the beginning. I'll reserve judgment until I see the documentary.
Anything else, Rachel?
I saw the TV Glow, which is the follow-up to by Jane Schoenbrunn, who did We're All Going to World's Fair. It's another. I watched like four A24 movies this week. I saw that. Ooh. I saw.
How's the Kristen Stewart one? How's that?
Love Lies Bleeding. Good. That's in theaters right now.
Do you think we could justify doing it for the show?
Oh yeah. There's some body horror in it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's definitely adjacent, but there are like it's described as like a lesbian crime thriller body horror, and there is a whisper of body horror in it.
John's language.
I might see it tomorrow actually, but
let me see.
Yeah, I'll definitely watch that for sure.
Yeah, it's great.
I'm gonna watch it whether we do it on the show or not. Is what I'm saying.
I think there's stuff to unpack in it. I don't have it here.
I mean, the trailer's great. The reviews have been media.
I saw a screening last night. So I saw that. I saw Dead Male, which is like a little indie horror film that is I don't know if you'll like it, but it would be interesting to talk about. Mm. And Hunting Days, which was not for me.
Is it for us though?
I don't know.
We're pretty aligned usually.
I think Y2K will be the most fun. It's the most fun I had in all of the movies that I saw. And I almost texted Eric after it. And then I was like, nope, I don't want to spoil this moment for him. But there's something that is just for you personally.
I can't wait. In Love Lies.
And then I'll send you all the pictures.
No, in the Y2K.
Then I'll send you all the pictures afterwards from the Q&A.
I do appreciate you thinking about me. Speaking of fun. We are, but the day this comes out, we will be exactly 1 week from all of us convening in Cincinnati. Yes.
We'll see if you like me on the other side of a screen.
I was going to say,
it'll
it's be
a
the
lot
first time
of I'd... energy.
Wait, Rachel, have you met any of us in person? Oh my
only,
God.
I don't think Whitney's coming. She's the only person that I've met face to face.
Who is?
Wait, Whitney's coming?
Whitney. I don't know if she's coming, but I'm just saying in the BGH world, she's the only person I've met.
No, I don't think she is.
Bummer. You know, the question I have, Rachel, and if you don't want to say, you can text me. I'm just wondering how tall you are because I have no concept of how tall you are.
Oh, I'm a shorty. I'm a short queen.
Sweet.
I'm 5'2".
High five.
Oh, wow. Right.
Love it.
Yeah.
I would not have guessed. That's wild.
Oh, really? Do I give
For some reason,
tall
I
energy?
Thought you could potentially be like 6 feet tall. I don't know why.
Really?
I thought
that. Yeah. No, I'm like a little pocket fatty. You'll see.
Prepare to feel tall for the weekend, Rachel. Colleen's only 5 foot.
Yes, I'm going to tower over her.
I hope you guys are ready to babysit a gremlin, and that gremlin is me.
I am. As a matter of fact,
my one horror memory I always talk about, because it's just, it's funny. It's both like hilarious and also just brotherly love, was that one time it was like on Friday, we had a booth at the convention we were setting up for, it was open, and it was so goddamn cranky. And like, I was just bitching about something, and Mark just walked up to me and just did one of these and was like, shh, like, go take a nap. And I was like, if it was anyone else, I would have been offended by it, but I knew he genuinely just knew what I needed. And I was like, okay.
Should we keep snacks on us? Like, if you start getting hangry?
No, I'm like so I'm actually, I'm beginning to plan this now. I'm borrowing one of my parents' suitcases because I don't have one that's big enough. Because I'm going to LA after this for work. Mm-hmm. So I'm gone for like 7 days. Half of my suitcase is going to be like food and sundries to just keep this keep this going. Keep
there's like
this.
A 50% chance
you're going to hide the suitcase.
Yeah.
What, John?
I said it's a 50% chance you're making it home in one piece. So.
Oof, it's going to be brutal. And then the week after that, I'm getting a tattoo. I'm getting a Return of the Living Dead tattoo.
Awesome. What are you getting?
Tar Man.
Oh, yes. Amazing. It's going to be
pretty gnarly.
Rachel, the main rule to remember with Eric at Horror Hound is the moment that you can't find him and you start to wonder where Eric went, he's back in the room.
I'm just back in the room. Yeah.
Are you an Irish goodbyer for sure?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. He's the king.
Rachel, I pride myself in being perhaps the world's greatest Irish goodbye perpetrator.
All right. I'm going to be counting on you, John, to shut it down with me because I like to close it out.
Casey can hang too. Don't worry. Casey, we'll be
okay.
We'll be all
right. Okay, good.
So it's interesting because like we haven't been together since pre-pandemic. Like, yeah. So it's crazy to think like, I always get reminded that we were together like a few months before in October, mm-hmm. right before the pandemic, yeah. But it seemed like 100 fucking years. Like
I know,
because then the world changed and everything was different. But I remember we did, where was that? Chicago.
Right. Yeah.
Fall 2019. And we did like trivia and karaoke and we were at that bar. I legitimately, that's probably the last time I drank for real.
Well, it was like, the latest Eric spin-up.
Remember we were there for like 12 hours?
Oh, yeah.
And I just walked up to John.
I actually don't remember the last like 3 hours.
I walked up to John at one point and just dead seriously was like, you need to take me home. I am done.
It got dark for me toward the end of the night. But yeah.
Oh, yes.
See, you know what part of my Irish goodbye thing is? And so I am friends with a lot of drinkers and stuff. And I haven't drank in 3.5 years, longer than that now. Like saying goodbye to a drunk person, especially if you're sober, is like top 10 worst experiences fucking ever. So like say your nice things to me when we meet, we can have a conversation, we can say all the pleasantries, but like I'm not gonna sit there. First of all, I fucking hate people who are like, oh, you gotta stay, like fuck off. I'm like that, I'm avoiding that first of all, and I'm avoiding drunk people who get overly emotional because like they're not gonna see you again or whatever. I don't need that.
Yeah, that's
a bummer.
Fine. Yeah.
Like, it's just too much. So, and then it takes an hour to talk to everybody. Like, I'm just going to, like, roadrunner my ass. Like, you're going to look and there's going to be a cloud of dust, basically.
Yeah.
Don't be offended by it.
I won't. Good news is I'm like a happy drinker. I get like, you'll have to deal with me being like, I love you so much, Eric.
That's cool.
I don't know
me.
If I've told you.
I'm actually a happy drunk too. I just don't drink anymore. But like, I was a real happy drunk. I never understood angry drunks.
Yeah.
And you'll be in a good crowd too. Our Halloween friends at Horror Hound are always a blast. So you'll be in a good place.
And we should say like, if people are going, like, I know there's some people on Slack, like, hit us up on Slack or email or something. Just let us know if you're going to be there. Cause like there's going to be, I would imagine, a shit ton of people there. So if you're coming and would like to meet us, we got to figure out how to coordinate somehow. Like,
yeah, like
if you're
what
on Slack,
are we doing
that's the perfect place.
Are we going to like a party or like, what are we doing?
I was just going to like America, a bottle of liquor in the room.
Well, historically, Friday nights are a big, fairly big party in the lobby of the hotel, from what I remember, at least in Indy. So kind of everybody from the convention is down in the bar area, which I'm assuming is similar in Cincinnati. And it's kind of a big mass of people and it's a good time. So
dope.
Rachel, wherever you are, that's where the party
that's
is.
That's where the party is.
Okay. See, here's the thing: is then you're gonna find out that I'm actually secretly an introvert, yeah. I'm worried you're gonna be disappointed when I'm like,
"We'll make it work. Don't worry."
Okay. I mean, alcohol helps.
Yeah,
I'm actually really good with introverts because I sort of was one, and I had to like force myself to get out of it. Mm-hmm. And so when I see people that are introverts, I like go out of my way to like make things easier for them, like involve them in the goings on.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. You can be my emotional support friend.
I'll be your intro buddy.
Yeah.
You'll find out exactly how extroverted I am. So you can just hide behind me.
Sounds good.
All right. info@bloodygoodhorror.com is email address. One email this week from Randy. Saltburn's pivotal bath scene brought me back to the good old days of BGH grooming tips. Those early days can be frightening because a lot of airtime was devoted to the conundrum of serial toilet disposal. I can clearly remember that just unlocked a memory for you, Rich.
Yes.
I never forget. I think about it every day. I can clearly remember about a dozen years ago when Eric would talk about standing in the shower and never worrying about washing his legs because the soap and water just ran down there, right? That position was reversed in the last year or two, which shocked me. Just wondering if the crew had any new revelations about personal style to pass along. So This actually came up a couple weeks ago because I remembered it as Joe saying that, and he confirmed this on Slack. We were talking about it.
Yeah, I thought it was Joe too.
Now I'm like, I never want to unequivocally say, no, I didn't say that because I don't know what I said fucking 12 years ago. But I'm like having this memory now. And what I think may have happened is that I was originally on Joe's side. But when I got wind of the scorn he was receiving for this, I became a below-the-waist washer, specifically for the feet. Like, legs are kind of legs. Like your knees get that dirty? I don't know. But feet, you got to wash your feet. And I'm definitely, like, I am definitely a convert now.
It's definitely one of those things, like, when you see a doctor and you're in your like 70s, they check like how often you clip your toenails because it's like a sign if you don't clip your toenails that you are like fucking physically deteriorating. Like if you are not washing your feet, that's like
John,
a
that
sign.
Whole thing you just said made me want to vomit, first of all.
Yeah.
Second of all,
saying that's true.
I'm picturing some rough ass hooves, right?
I mean,
just your average feet on a dude walking around are an atrocity. Like, forget a 70-year-old.
But you gotta wash them. Like, step one, wash them. Like,
I've been washing my feet for at least 12 years, John, so leave me alone.
Ever since you found out it was unacceptable to not wash your feet. Yeah. Fair.
That's it for email. Casey, what do we got on threads?
All right, we got a couple threads out here. Let's see here. Our first one, good question from our buddy, the drummer from Foghat. Are there any conspiracy theories you think are plausible or hold water in any way? For me, the moon is 100% made of cheese, and I have proof.
Man. This is such a...
Well, I'm not big on big conspiracies, but I found a thread on Reddit or something the other day where somebody had asked, you know, what is like your favorite... like inconsequential conspiracy that doesn't really amount to anything and you kind of believe. And somebody had posted about how you ever notice going by a Costco parking lot and it's always full of cars, but if you go in, the number of people in the store never match the number of cars in the parking lot. And I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. Like they're making it look busier.
That's insane.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I was like, is there like an eyes wide shut in the basement situation? Like, what is that?
No, to make it look busier, like it's happened in place.
They're just like parking multiple cars out there.
One that I 100% believe after John Oliver did a whole episode on it is the theory that Chuck E. Cheese recycles pizza slices into new pizzas for people.
Yes.
Because they had photo evidence and it was extremely convincing.
Wait,
and it was funny. So then my daughter's birthday party was at Chuck E. Cheese this year. And I was talking with one of the other dads.
Even after that episode.
And we started talking about that thing and how it was like this conspiracy theory. And we're all like, oh, we got to fucking check these pizzas out when they get out here. And then right before food was supposed to be served, the power went out and no pizza served. And I was like, I'm just asking questions.
Knew. Yeah, okay? They got you.
Free birthday party though. So that was cool.
That's huge. That's,
yeah. That's a win-win. Cold and flu virus that you was a bonus that you took home with right. you, I'm sure.
I mean, that was going to happen either way, though. Wait, speaking of potentially inconsequential conspiracy theories, what do we think the deal is with the Princess of Sussex or whatever the fuck her name is?
Kate. This is weird. I just read the thing about her not having her wedding ring on in that photo, and that's what people are freaking out about now. Like, what is going on?
Well, she's gone. Okay, she's been missing for a while.
Since January. Yeah,
yes, and she supposedly had some sort of medical procedure, and then they like released a photo of her that was like,
wait a second,
Loch Ness monster.
I'm just saying, do you think she's alive or dead,
guys?
I think she's alive. I think she got a facelift and it needs to settle.
I had to check that I wasn't muted because you guys weren't listening to me. Can we back it up?
Sorry.
Yes, Eric. She had abdominal surgery.
Wait. John.
Yes.
I did not understand this part. I knew she had surgery and that they were being coy about it and that there might be like a cancer situation or something, but I did not, and I knew the photo came out, but I didn't understand. She's not been seen in public since then at all?
No. The photo was the like proof of life photo that
this is real then.
It was like a grainy Loch Ness monster style.
So today
they released a like heavily photoshopped, like they just dropped her face into a photo.
Wait, that's what there's a new photo? They did a second one?
There's a family photo with her and the kids. And she was first being called out for like a lot of face tuning happening.
Well, and then, like the hands look
and
weird.
The hands
like
are all off and stuff.
Yeah, the girl's dress was weird. And then somebody noticed she didn't have her wedding ring on. It's just a lot of weirdness.
Yeah.
I didn't realize the conspiracy. I knew about the picture and the AI. Suspecting it was AI. I didn't realize how deep it went.
I will say another thing.
Well,
another
king has cancer. That's like real.
Secret in the news industry is that when your favorite news anchors are off air for like 6 weeks, it's usually because they had a facelift.
Yeah.
And they just go away until they can come back again.
Yeah. Just let the girl's face settle.
So that is possible. Like, that's a possibility, and that's not. A good conspiracy. But
no comment.
Archie had an actual abdominal procedure and is healing from that.
I mean,
just as likely.
Well, she did have kids. Like, there's definitely very viable procedures she could.
Yeah, she could just be like really sick. Like, that's totally possible. But they're acting weird about it. That's what's
because
like,
they're so fucking weird. I mean, that's the thing. Like, this whole. Oh God, you're gonna get me in. Like,
no, we can move on.
Harry and Meghan. It's like Harry is clearly out of his mind, but I think they all are. And I think he really is just trying to escape the craziness. But he's also crazy because he had no fucking shot of not being crazy. I think Meghan Markle's crazy. I think they're all fucking batshit. Okay, but like. It is clearly so insane. Like, those people are so cloistered in that world. I don't think they know how fucking nuts they are. Like, I don't think they have any clue how disconnected they are from, like, the reality.
I mean, without all the debauchery necessarily, but I always kind of suspected they're like the Saltburn family.
I mean, you know. So here's what I'll say, okay, conspiracy theory-wise. And I do want to – I'd like to recognize that we used to have – funsies with conspiracy theories in the show and dabble in them. It got less fun after 2016 because
terrible.
Now you gotta just now when people start spouting this shit, you're like, oh, are you like a dangerous person to be around? Legitimately, like, but I've always been fascinated with the moon landing conspiracy, and very specifically because it ties in Stanley Kubrick, like that version of it where like Space Odyssey is essentially like a practice run at faking the moon landing is the fucking most fascinating thing. And then when you watch the Shining documentary and in there they expand on the mythos that it was that the Shining was this big elaborate secret confession of what he did. And then like, but then there is shit like Danny's wearing an Apollo fucking sweatshirt and these tapestries have rockets on. Like, I love it. I love it so fucking much. Yeah. But then if somebody ever came up to me and were like, we didn't land on the moon, I'd be like, you fucking idiot. So like, I don't know, man. Like, I can't.
Well, the problem is, if they believe that, there's like a lot of other conspiracies that get darker.
Because on its face, I think there is a you could convince me that there was something to gain in the middle of the Cold War by the U.S. claiming they had landed on the moon, right? And the fact that no one else has ever gone back, that to me is a definitive thing that we'll just be like, okay, like we fucking someone else did it, it's fine, but. I'm sure we landed on the moon, guys. It's fine.
Are you though?
But I
Are
love you? It. I love it so much.
All right. Next from Well Adjusted Podcast: is this movie weaker or stronger for only having one character on screen?
Well, it needed at least the bread man, so weaker.
Yeah. Yeah, the fact that the only other character we got on screen was.
Feet. We got that dude's feet.
That's true. All right, last up, we have Popcorn Designs. How often is Eric tempted to edit everyone else's audio? Add some extra razzle-dazzle to the show. Maybe some problematic opinions from John. Get some press.
I never cut a thing unless, like, and we didn't. I should have said this out loud in that episode a couple weeks ago that we did with... Ariel. What was that movie with the first creepy first date?
Cat person.
Yeah. So there was a windstorm here and it was messing with my internet. So I kept dropping out. That show needed editing because there were sections where everybody was like, where's Eric? What's going on? Like, but it day to day, I don't cut shit from the show. So I'll often like, you know, there's been a lot of people that started their own shows that were fans or whatever, or just ask me and they're like, yeah, do you cut out like, ahs and ums and stuff. I'm like, fucking no, I don't. I have a life.
You just said you listen to the show, right? I think you can hear the ums.
I do take individual mics. I mix them individually to get everybody sounding good and stuff. And then I just cut the show together, but I don't chop anything out. I know he was not seriously asking, but there you go.
Yeah. If you had to cut ums and likes, I would have been a one-time guest.
At work, like we make documentary style audio projects and like fully there's like words being chopped together in a very journalistically
high integrity situation. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But here's a secret about regular people with no media training when they do interviews, they're fucking terrible most of the time. And so like, the thing you are hearing is someone else going through painstaking work to make them sound listenable.
Mm-hmm. I don't do it with a podcast, but I do it with, you know, text on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That's it for threads, Eric.
Love it. At least the last time I checked, we just had a few quick ones. Stand by. I always have to do a quick check. Are these real questions? Speak of the devil, Joe writes in, the Joe, do you need to see this one before watching Duolith? I don't know.
Just
his mind.
Move on.
His mind.
He took time out of his day to write that.
Yeah.
And then I read it. This question I like. Will John vote for Aaron Rodgers for VP?
Oh my God.
I cannot think of anything to add more perfectly to the hellscape that this election is going to be than fucking...
No, I agree.
Dipshit Kennedy running with fucking Aaron Rodgers.
Oh my God.
How are we going to get through this year? By the way,
we should say that's not like... A story was floated today that he's on the short list for VPs. Yeah.
I mean, it's stupid enough. It makes sense.
Exactly. Yeah. It is stupid enough that it makes sense.
I mean, for RFK Jr., to be clear.
Is Jesse Ventura stupider or less stupid?
I mean, he was a governor at least.
He was okay. He was not a bad governor.
Also, it's funny.
He's maybe gone a little off.
It's funny because people rightly rag on both Biden and Trump for their age. But like, can we talk about the fact that RFK Jr. has done like more steroids than Hulk Hogan? Like that dude's fucking heart is going to explode at literally any moment.
I was going to say, but he does videos of push-ups, shirtless push-ups. So, you know, it's okay.
He's horrifying looking. Like that's.
I know.
He looks like Macho Man right before his heart exploded. Is all I'm saying.
Oh yeah.
You know how Macho Man died, John? He was just driving down the road and his heart just burst and he ran into a tree.
Drank a Celsius.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was drinking a Celsius. I'm telling you, Rachel, I would drink those while I was working out, and I legitimately, and I was using the Apple Watch at the time to track my heart rate, and it'd be like, damn, dude. When I stopped
drinking them. You may be having a cardiac event.
When I stopped drinking them, my watch like a week later was like, your heartbeat is like 10 beats per minute lower than it was last week. What's going on? I'm not filling myself with poison every day.
Yeah. I don't know. The more we talk about it, the more I just want to crack one open.
I want to try one because you guys make it sound like I'm doing
it's delicious brain juice, John. It's so, man.
I mean, it tastes like an energy drink, but at the same time, you'll be flying high.
But it is like, it's cleaner than a Red Bull. Like it feels like less trash. Even if it's just a little less of a
chemical burn flavor.
Yes. Yeah. It feels like less trash for your body for sure. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you when I'm going to probably drink one is the day after I get back from this 7-day trip is probably when I have to unpack or something.
Yeah. All right. I say Friday night, Celsius body shots. Let's do it.
Last question, and it's a good one. Are you more excited to see Immaculate or The First Omen?
Ooh.
So
Immaculate all day.
I avoid all of the like stuff, but I saw a headline on like fucking landing page on the internet that was like positive comments about Immaculate. And I was like, huh? Okay.
I mean, honestly, I saw a negative review on the Daily Beast, but their reviews are trash. But I watch anything with Sydney Sweeney in it. I don't want to make it weird, but
we know. we're aware.
She's very talented, John.
Yeah. No. But sure. I don't. No comment.
And
no,
I don't want to watch a sequel to fucking anything. Sequel, prequel. I don't fucking want any of that in 2024. So
I don't know. I'm here.
That's
for
also
it.
A big part of it for
I'm
me.
I'm kind of into The First Omen too. Yeah.
It's just one of those trailers. It's a really creative trailer.
It is. Yeah.
It tells me nothing about the movie itself.
I like that though. That's like the best to be. I don't want the movie spoiled by the trailer, and I want a vibe. I want
that
to know what
is
I'm
true.
Getting into.
However,
if they deliver what they're putting
however,
forward,
I have been burned really too many times to equate a creatively put together trailer with a good movie.
True.
Fair. On the flip side, I have now seen the Godzilla versus Kong trailer 7 times.
That movie looks like butt.
It looks like the worst movie ever.
It looks
made.
Like fucking butt. And all I can think every time I watch that trailer is like, what happened? Rebecca Hall was in that Night House movie, which was incredible.
Well, she's in the other.
No, I know she is, but like, I hope she's amazing. I hope she's getting paid for this.
They're
movies.
Just lucky that Madam Web exists this year because it's not the really biggest, saved their bacon.
I literally cannot wait. We have to see it because I just need to hear you talk about the logistics of the double sky.
So Eric, I actually know like a lot more now because I've watched all of Monarch Legacy of Monsters.
Tell me.
And they explain the hell out of it. Like they're not giving up on this like world within the world nonsense.
Tell me how there's lens flares underground, John. Let me know.
It's not actually in the earth is the thing. You're going into like a wormhole and it's actually like an alternate universe.
Which is why I got so angry when they were staring at each other through the hole.
But yeah, that makes that worse.
Well, and in the movie, and they don't do this in the show, but in the movie, remember, it is like convex or concave, whatever. It's like they can look up and see the other part of the land. Like it curves around. That doesn't happen in the show. In the show, it's just like, oh, now we're in the other realm. And yes, we went underground, but we went.
Whatever. So in that show, they spend time in that other place.
Yeah. Oh yeah, a lot.
Sweet.
The other thing that happens there is time doesn't move. It's like you move. Mm. It's like one day equals like 6 years.
I mean,
something.
Listen, I will say this: like Godzilla Minus One is a fantastic film, and I think like many people have said this. Those kind of the Japanese ones are where you go to see something truly interesting done with Godzilla, where because they've done it so many times, they're just trying to iterate and make it human and interesting. The American ones are where you go for like big dumb explosions, and I'm not above that. Like that's King of the Monsters was like a lot of fun, but like the human part of King of the Monsters was dog shit. Like it was so bad. But like Mecha Godzilla, like but they're in Boston tearing shit up. Like I, you know, that was fun. So
more than anything,
I can get into that part.
I'm pretty eye-rolly over this trailer, too, and I'm a pretty big Godzilla fanboy. I shot Colleen down her trip when it came on the trailer came on the TV, and I'm like, that looks dumb. And she's like, what's wrong with you? Are you okay? But it feels like they've turned it into a Transformers movie.
Well, yeah, they 100% have. I mean,
yeah.
It also, it's like very much on the corner of the Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Cause like that it seems like is the plot of this new one, but I don't know.
I think part of what, judgment
until we see
here's,
it.
So here's my part of my issue with it. I don't care about the ape stuff. I like King Kong. He's cool, but I want to go in the monsters version where it's all the like Ghidorah and like all that shit. Mothra. Like
you have a Mothra shirt now. So we,
I do
you know, we gotta,
but that's the fun stuff for me. Like was it King of Monsters was the name of that American one?
Yeah.
Like, the bunch of apes. I don't fucking give a shit. Come on.
That was
Godzilla is clearly the coolest part of this upcoming film. Like
apes with robot hands.
Even in that standalone King Kong movie on Skull Island, like there's a bunch of other cool monsters, right? It's like,
yeah.
I'm not sure how well King Kong just works by himself. I feel like,
yeah, I guess you're right. I did really like that one, but it was, there like, is
there
like
was a giant squid,
a menagerie of monsters. Yeah.
There were some great actors in that movie. I mean, that was a fun movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Uh-oh. It's Casey's bedtime, apparently.
Sorry.
It's definitely mine. All right, so our guess, maybe we're going to try to do, what is it? Love what?
Love Lies Bleeding.
Love Lies Bleeding
this
week. I can't
hear you guys think of that one.
I think I can swing the theater this week. I can make that happen. And then, the week after that, I'm going to be out of town, so we'll take that week off, I guess. But we definitely have some stuff to catch up on. There's been a couple of theatrical
releases. I mean, if we wanted to try to rip something off while we're in Cincy, we could do that. I mean, not even like a review. We could just do like a
live show. Or a live.
Yeah, let me think about the logistics of that. But yeah.
Okay. All right, I got Love Lies penciled in. And so it gets a little crazy. We are in the theater for like 5 weeks straight after that. Between Immaculate, Ghostbusters, Godzilla Kong, First Omen, Civil War.
That's a pretty fun run, dude. I'm into it.
Well, and then Abigail, which you guys are excited about. I am less excited.
We know. With the week you were out, we talked extensively about how much of a killjoy you were being on that one. Talked a lot of shit about you that week, John.
Get me another movie that has a girl dancing in it.
All right, Rachel, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me all across the Zombie Girls Podcast Network on Instagram, Twitter, Blue Sky, all that jazz at ZG Podcasts. Or if you want to follow me personally, I'm at Richie Pants on all the things.
Love it. While we're here, should we just do more business? Do you want to just join us next week for Love Lies Bleeding?
Sure. Yeah.
Book it.
I'll hop on. Right. I'm happy to talk about Kristen Stewart in serious states of undress.
Hey, we have that in common.
I was going to say, I saw Kristen Stewart's all the hubbub about her outfit at the premiere for that, and I was like, oh, hello.
Yeah.
She's giving bi wife energy, I think.
Should I Google that image?
Yes,
I
think
you should.
Okay. Yes, you should. And then get ready to fall in love with Katie O'Brien.
Well, I can't wait. All right, guys. That's going to do it. See you next week. Later.
See you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.